Blog Talk Radio.
Let's get lost in a better place. Pick up the world, travel through time and space. So much to learn, so much to see. A chance to escape reality. Open your mind and your heart. Gain new knowledge for a fresh new start. Network will bring you there. So let's talk about it when life and on the air.
Well, good morning, everyone. This is MJ Network, and this is Fran Lewis, your host, and we have a blockbuster show today. Boy, everybody's here. I am so excited and so honored. So let me introduce my award-winning authors. She's the award-winning author of the Virginia Templeton series, and it's hot and sassy. She's the host of A Good Story is a Good Story. She's Marcia Casper Cook. Hi, Marcia. How
are
you doing?
Hi. How are you?
Good. And
I'm happy to be on a show for a change where I don't have to be the host.
It's about time that somebody honored you, seriously.
Thank
now,
you so much.
The award-winning author of
Now,
yes,
Fran, I know. You've been a great friend for all these years. We know each other
That's
for all
right.
the years. We're both doing shows. You're doing shows on 9 years, too, so congratulations.
That's true. We try. And we have the award-winning author of Yesterday's News. We have Dick Belsky. Hi, Dick. And I'm reading your next one, by the way. It's coming out in May, but that doesn't stop me from reading it now.
You were the first one to ever read Yesterday's News, and I think about 5 months before it came out, and you called me and told me you liked it, which is always nice to hear that early. But I'm glad to be here. I don't host anything, but I'm always happy to be here.
Well, thank you. And now we have the award-winning author of Book of the Year and the Mystery Romance of the Year, Carla Negus, is here. Hi, Carla. And Imposter's Law. My uncle is getting a copy of it when he comes out of the nursing home for Hanukkah, because he wants it. I just thought I'd tell you, he asked.
Oh, that's wonderful. Give him my best.
I will, and he's getting a copy of Dick's book also, and he's getting a copy of Marilyn's book, and he's getting a copy of Virginia Templeton, because he's 97 and needs some energy, trust me.
Wow,
and
that's
now
awesome.
We have the award-winning author of the library series, the Haunted Library series. Carrie Singleton is her character, and Marilyn Levinson is here. Hi, Marilyn. Nice to have you.
Thank you, Fran. It's always a pleasure to be on one of your shows.
And now
and
we have
such
one
a
of
great
my favorite
crew.
Yeah, we do. Now we have one of my favorite people in the whole universe, and I'm so glad he's here. He's a star of the new Jessica Fletcher series and Caitlin Strunk, who's a lot like me. He's John Land. Hi, how are you? I'm so glad you're here.
How you doing, Fran? Good morning. Happy Monday.
Happy Monday. And we have my other favorite person, Uncle Len's favorite person, too, because he read The Russian Resurgent. Alan Topol's here. How you doing, Alan? Good morning.
Hi, terrific, Fran. Thrilled to be here. And, you know, so many of your people I love to be with. So thanks very, very much for including me.
Okay, I'm going to ask a question, and I don't care who answers it first. Okay? We're going to talk about characters, because as someone that has no clue when she's writing, and my characters are all dead, seriously, and they're behind the gravestone, and that's how they got there, because they did something evil. Characters drive the plot forward. My question is, how did you create Emma Sharp, Caitlin Strunk, Craig Page, Carrie Singleton, Virginia Templeton, and Claire Carlson? Not bad. I remembered all of them.
Wow.
How did you create
wow.
your main character? My photograph of memory. Don't let it kill you. How did you create your main character and what they do? And anybody that wants to start, be my guest, because I'm just going to sit back and listen until I ask the next question.
Well, I'll begin if I can. My character is the head of programs and events in a library, and my library happens to have a very large backyard, and the person who's in charge of events was introducing a drummer. We were outside, and I said to myself, wouldn't that be a wonderful character, because she has so much freedom to have that position. She could bring in all different kinds of people to do all kinds of events. And she has library people, lots of suspects and murderers and whoever. So I thought that would be a good character.
I agree with you.
Archie Belsky here. So my character is Clark Carlson is a former newspaper reporter who works now in television, and I, amazingly enough, am a former newspaper person who later worked in television. So I didn't go very far for the character, but what she is and what my other characters have always been is, you know, I basically try and take all the incredibly colorful characters and people I've met over the years in newsrooms and, you know, put them into a person, and that person is Claire Carlson. And everybody that I work with always says, oh, you know, Claire Carlson is really me, isn't she? Or she's this person. And the answer, you know, for a lot of reasons is, of course, no, but she isn't. You know, she's, it's just a lot of elements put together in a person that winds up being someone that hopefully people want to be around and like and find interesting, but at the same time can't be too perfect. You know, she's got to have a lot of flaws and a lot of things wrong with her. And I've met a lot of people like that, and the result is my character.
This is Alan Topol. That's actually a terrific point that you just made about characters having flaws, because my lead character, Craig Page, is a former CIA agent, and he becomes my vehicle to deal with some very hot international geopolitical issues. But as Fran knows, he has flaws. He can be unduly strong-willed, refuses sometimes to listen to reason, and flies off on his own. And I think that's really a good point, that you can't have a lead character who's just all perfect. I think that's a terrific point that was just...
Right,
John Land, you agree with that, don't you?
I do. And I also think, in my case, I don't have anything. As far as the creation of Caitlin Strong, I can't take credit for Jessica Fletcher. I don't go back to the 1980s. Although our good friend Tom Sawyer was involved in the creation and the show from the writing and showrunner aspect. What happened with Caitlin Strong was I had been doing another series which had kind of died out. And I was in this marketing meeting where we were discussing trends of publishing. And this goes back to the, you know, 2008 or so. And Tom Espensheed, who was head of mass market sales, there was a paperback industry back then. Now, unfortunately, there isn't much of one left. Anyway, Tom Espensheed, the head of mass market sales for Macmillan, or at least Tory Forge, said that thrillers were the most popular genre. And 75% of all books are bought by women. But no one at the table, based on his prompt, Tom Espensheed's prompt, could identify a single thriller female action hero. Plenty of mystery heroes, detectives, but no one who could stand toe-to-toe, not quite literally, with Jack Reacher. Someone, a female Jack Reacher, in other words. So I said, well, you can't have a female Navy SEAL. There's no such thing. You can't have a female Delta Force or special operator because they don't serve in combat. They do serve in support personnel. There are Green Berets who are women. They just don't see active combat. So I said, literally right at this meeting, what about a female Texas Ranger? And let's call her Caitlin Strong. Because I think one thing all the names that we heard have in common is – they all sound heroic. They all, although there are levels of darkness, and that's a great point about defining a character by their flaws as much as their strengths. That makes a conflicted protagonist. As much as that's true, that all the names that we have heard, Templeton, these are all classic American hero names. One short, Caitlin Strong being, it's like Luke's. When George Lucas was writing Star Wars, when he was naming his characters, clearly, if you hear the name Luke Skywalker and the name Darth Vader, even before you see the material, even before you know the story, you know who the hero is and you know who the villain is. And I think that's true of every name that I heard.
Yeah.
So I think that the name of the characters often reflects what's inside them. What Elmore Leonard was the master of this. I mean, we could go on from great pulp fiction writers, great entertainment writers of all time. And you see the ambiguity, and then I'll stop. Going all the way back to the first adventure after James Bond, the first thriller series that I read was Doc Savage, still being written today. I think it's on its 20th writer. Well, Doc Savage is a name that you wouldn't necessarily associate with being a hero. It's also kind of an oxymoron. You have the word Savage, but you also have the word Doc. And I think that that character's the elements of his dark side all the way back in the 1950s and 60s when his character was at its peak goes to the flaws that exactly that we're talking about. Same thing is true of James Bond as he was conceived by Ian Fleming. And see if anybody remembers, because I forgot how Ian Fleming came up with the name James Bond. It's very mundane. I just don't remember it.
I just want to say real quick, I agree with everything.
Yeah.
I was just going to say I agree with everything you said, but the one name that popped into my mind when you were going through all those strong names, which most of them are, is I'm not sure, you know, maybe the most popular mystery detective around today is Harry Bosch still by Michael Connelly. And that's a unique name because that's not a strong name, but it's a really unique name, and there's a reason for it, obviously, if you read the books with you know, why he was named that. But it's just there's no formula. Normally it is a, you know, a strong name, you know, or that kind of feeling. But sometimes you can come up with something incredibly unique. Spencer might fall into that category too.
Yeah, this is Marcia Cook. I was a screenwriter. I still am. But 20 years ago, I came up with a character that, because I agree, because Jessica Fletcher, I know, I understand what you were saying about that, because at that time, women were not even in lead roles as much. And it was like I tried, and Virginia was the only character that I've had all these years that I feel it has such strength. You know, I do children's books, and I've done a lot of other, you know, romance. But I think that right now it's so important, too, to have women in lead roles and really strength. And the name does matter. For me it does, because it takes me forever to get a name. And sometimes I think people may understand this, that you sometimes think people say, oh, change the name. I can't seem to change names good. If I do, it turns into another character, because once I have a name, it's like a person to me. And
that's very true.
Yeah,
that's so
yeah,
true.
And that's what the industry is. It's tough if you are a female author in years ago. Now it's so much better. But I went under Max Irving, and I was a WGA agent. And I know when they asked for scripts, they would say strong male lead. They didn't care too much about the female. So things have changed a lot. So and Jessica Fletcher is a name that everybody knows. So I think that
read it.
Yeah,
you have to read this new version of Jessica Fletcher is different. It's fantastic.
But you know, Fran,
I know.
Marcia is making a great point, because
she is.
I think a lot of the resistance, at least on Amazon, to all the one-star reviewers that haven't enjoyed my take on Jessica Fletcher, and this goes to Marcia's point. It's because I've tried to make her stronger, more independent, more contemporary. And this is, Marcia, I think you've just illuminated why there are people who are struggling with my take on Jessica, because I think this may sound wrong what I'm about to say, but there's an element of truth here somewhere, and that is, I think there are fans of Jessica Fletcher who resent the fact that I have made her made her into someone who's tougher, who can stand on her own two feet, who isn't a pushover, who isn't someone you can bully, or someone who's always polite to everyone else, even when they're not being polite to her. Maybe that worked, and maybe that was the character as created, or it was the character that was created in 1985. But what I'm doing is I'm writing Jessica as if she were conceived in 2008.
Right, and that's really what a writer wants to do. You want to get an audience that likes your writing, but you can't always, but that's the thing about taking a character on of somebody else's, which is hard. You know, it is very hard. And Texas Ranger, I don't know if anybody remembers that there were, a few years ago there was a show called Texas Ranger. They had a strongest character. I loved her. They took it off. She was really good. And, you know, and that's what happened. So I think that anything that authors do now to bring out how strong females are is a good thing. And it's a bad thing to make a woman strong. So I think that we're all on the same page here because we're all writing characters that, you know, all these characters are important to us, and we hope that the reader gets it.
Talking about a strong female characters, and my character is a strong female character too, I recently interviewed Sarah Paretsky for a magazine article, and she talked just really what was said earlier, this idea that, you know, at some point in the 80s, everybody, all the fans of these books
Wersowski,
were women, but
yeah.
none of the
yeah.
characters were women. Yeah. And, you know, basically she and, you know, and the great, late, unfortunate Sue Grafton were the, you know, were the pioneers, were
yeah.
big pioneers in this, and they created the idea, and this led to Janet Ivanovich and, you
yeah.
know, and all the things that have happened before. And she talked at some length about that, about, you know, forming Sisters in Crime, and
yeah.
but really, until that point, you didn't see hardly anyone who was a strong female
yeah.
character.
Yeah.
And I just read, like, the latest V.R. Wyszynski, and she is a tough lady. You know?
Yeah.
So there was a lot of – there was several women that kind of led the way back then.
Yeah, yeah. But don't you think – this is Marilyn Levinson. But don't you think that characters evolve and that people should allow Jessica Fletcher to evolve? I mean – our own characters evolved, characters we started with.
Yeah.
Well,
even
I have a question.
We've changed. I've changed in my writing as far as when I first started, I had trouble swearing. And because I'm thinking like, oh, I'm writing the screenplay, and I said, I can't swear this, and they'll think it's me. This is how I talk. And that was then, so I went under Max Irving. And because I felt like I learned how to do that. And even when I wrote Virginia Templeton, it's because I had so many sexy, erotic authors on my shows that I thought, well, I'm going to try this. And I really liked it, but now I can do it. 20 years ago, I could not have done this. You know, and I think, so I've changed, and Fran knows that, because it was hard for me, you know, and doing those sex scenes were difficult to write because I'm thinking like, oh, I don't know, you know, but there are so many writers now, and I think everybody on the show will know this too, is when you have writers out there that are writing strong characters, it's not us, we're just writing, you know, that's a hard thing to get over for me.
I have a question for John, just following up on Jessica Fletcher. John, I got to know Donald Bain a bit before he died and heard him and was able to talk a bit about writing that character. So I guess my question to you is, I agree that, you know, they want the character to evolve. Are the people, you know, that behind this, do they encourage that? Because I know Donald talked a lot about the fact that he was, you know, he was kept to fairly strict parameters in how he could write the Jessica Fletcher character when he was doing it.
Yeah.
You know, I think that things have loosened up, and I think that the studio, which is NBC Universal,
mm-hmm.
has embraced what I'm trying to do, you know, because they see it. That everything is edgy and dark now. On you
yeah.
know, you really, you know, look
yeah.
the trend in television
yeah.
when you look at shows like True Detective and Fargo
yep.
and Ray Donovan and you couldn't do exactly, and characters who are morally ambiguous, morally conflicted,
mm-hmm.
you couldn't do Murder, She Wrote as it was done
right,
in 1985
right,
and
right,
get it on
right.
the air today.
Right.
There's
absolutely.
No, but in 1985, I mean, you could. It was cutting edge, believe it or
yeah.
not. Look,
yeah.
we're talking about, you know, television. The number one show of all time until the last episode of The Fugitive and then MASH was The Birth of Little Ricky on I Love Lucy, which was ironic because they slept in separate
yeah.
beds.
I know.
Right.
And so, television, that was in the 50s, early 60s. In the 80s, television still had not evolved anywhere near to where it is now.
No.
So
yeah.
when you look at the parameters the studio is setting for me, those parameters are based on television as it's perceived today, what it would be like to put Jessica Fletcher on the air today, and not so much what it was like in 1985. The show remained the show all the way through 96, actually 98, when it went off the air. Right. So I think they welcome the fresh perspective. Now, that said, the people who have not enjoyed my take on the series, especially in the more in the most recent book, Manuscript for Murder, it's because and this, someone made a great point about our own characters change. Shouldn't Jessica change? Unfortunately, the answer to that question in some minds, in some the minds of some readers, is no.
Yeah. Yeah.
She shouldn't. Mm-hmm. These books should be dominated by bake sales, and book sales and one thing Don, and this is from working with his grandson, one of the things Don was fearing for the last four or five books, which were actually co-written by his wife Renee,
right,
was that he was writing Jessica as an old Victorian schoolmarm,
right.
that he had lost even the mysterious the edge that she had had when he started writing the book series, that she had become too old-fashioned in her ways. So it's very difficult when you take over a series or take over a character. Someone made this point, too. You have to take ownership of that character in the same way you would if you had conceived that character yourself. There's got to be a stake for you in that character.
Yeah.
And I had that right from the beginning with Jessica, because my recollection of her from the TV series was as a different character than was being portrayed in recent books in Don Bain's work and his series.
Right.
But don't you raise a very good point that we can't please everyone? And I think, you know, I looked at some really big names and see that they get ones and twos also. And it's because you cannot possibly please every reader. And I think once you realize that and accept it, you say, all right, that's what they wanted, but Jessica's going to evolve.
You know what the problem is, though? I've noticed this on Goodreads, because I always talk about it on my show.
When I get
on Goodreads, I'm ready to kill myself. I hate Goodreads, okay? Because they're going to read a book. What does that mean, they're going to read a book? Maybe 20 years later? I mean, they're going to read a book.
And they give you one star?
And then they open the book. I've looked at people. They open the book and go, I don't like this book, and close it and give it a one star. Now, that is ridiculous, which is why we all like Fran Lewis, because Fran Lewis reads the book.
Yes,
and that
yes.
is really important. So, Fran, you can't just sit back there and not say one more word.
I'm listening to you. Okay. I don't want to interrupt
no,
everyone.
No, because it's true, though, because people give reviews if they don't finish a book. This is not fair to an author.
No, but they don't even read it. Sometimes they don't even read it.
It's called the beginning,
and they give it one star.
This is Alan Temple. Let me ask you.
I got a two-star review from someone for Faces Behind the Stone, my first Faces book, and I've read the two-star review, and I cracked up laughing, and the person said, the reason I gave it two stars is because I didn't understand what the book was about, so I never finished it. I said, well, maybe if you learned how to read and comprehend, you wouldn't have that problem. And I was very blunt. I cracked up laughing because, you know what, if you didn't understand the fact that the characters were flawed, that they got there because they were bad. So my question is, as a reviewer, I'm watch this right, I read every word, and I don't miss anything.
Right.
And
no,
you know
not.
What?
You do not.
No, I try not. I try not to. But how do you keep, like somebody like myself, like John knows that Caitlin Strong is a lot like me because I have a big mouth and that's just the way I am and I don't care. How do you keep someone like myself wanting to read Craig Page or Carrie Singleton or Emma or all of your characters from novel to novel without saying, oh, no, nuts, it's another novel by that character. Oh, my God, why are they sending it to me? Which happened last week, and I'm saying, do I really have to read this? Oh, my God, why am I doing it? I don't write negative reviews, but I will tell you very honestly, if a book doesn't get 3.5 stars, I won't review it. I just put it on the side and say, oh, my God, and I did get one about somebody in politics, and I did toss it. Seriously.
But, Fran,
so
you understand mostly every book, though. But, see, that's the one thing I've noticed when I listen to your shows. Everybody says you get it, okay? And
yeah, I do.
Everybody knows that you get what we all write. But most people don't get it, and so if they don't get it, I shouldn't say most people. I said some people that write bad reviews sometimes don't get the book, and they don't know. I know all of us here agree probably on one thing. There's a beginning, middle, and end. You have to have those three things. And if you don't wait till the end, because sometimes a book at the end, you go, oh, my God, what a great ending. And, you know, and then it's really a good, pulls it all together. But if you don't wait till that point, that's not fair. That's wrong. you don't know you're, what you're missing.
This is Hillary Kirkus reviews. They write the summary of the book, and then the last sentence, they either get you or they don't get you. Seriously.
Yeah.
And they zonk a lot of good people. But if you want to read something that I just finished in one day, also bought for Mark Cameron, and people have criticized that too, and it was fantastic, but I read the whole book and got it. So how do you keep me coming back, seriously?
Well,
how
my,
do you keep
my
your main character?
I
deal with relationships. I think relationships are the most important elements of one of the most important elements
mm-hmm.
of my books, even though they're mysteries.
Mm-hmm.
In Red and Gone, her father comes back. He's a thief, and she's feeling very negative towards him. And it's how their relationship rebuilds somewhat. And the next book I'm writing, the fourth book, the third book, there are a few deaths. The fourth one, her mother comes to town, and there's a movie being made. Her new husband's in it. So I try to keep relationships and secrets. I love secrets. So they're always popping up. I think we need an element of surprise. I think that's what keeps things going.
Oh. Yeah.
Yeah, but all right, but this is Alan Topol. That's a good point. So we develop the characters. Their lives change. You know, like Craig Page and Elizabeth, their lives evolve. Things happen.
Mm.
But let me ask a related question to our panelists is, when do you decide you're either you get tired of a character or you think your readers are when do you decide to abandon a character and on what criterion? Maybe the only answer is sales, but I'd be interested in what other people think about that.
Alan, that's
I agree,
Carla.
Sales. Contract.
This is Carla. I'll get a word in here. I
Go
think
ahead.
That's a really interesting question because some series are finite. You know, you think of Harry Potter, the seven books, and some are trilogies or four parts, and then there's the open-ended series, and that can be tricky. But I like what I didn't catch who said it about the relationships, and I think in a continuing series for me with the Sharp and Donovan series, Imposter's Lure was the eighth book and the ninth story. I wrote a novella too in the series, and what I hear from readers who love the books are they love to return to that world, to the people. They say when they're away from them, they feel like they're away from friends, and they like to come back to them. And that's how I feel. You know, I haven't read everybody's books, but I'm writing them all down. But I've been a Caitlin Strong fan with John Land from the very beginning. And I think it's her, it's not just that she's a strong character, which she is, it's the depth and the complexity of her and just how interesting she and that world that John has created is for me. I love to return to it.
Fran, I have a pretty simple answer, I think, to the question about how do you, you know, create a character that you hope people will want to, like yourself, will be attracted to and want to do. I've always tried to write my characters the kind of character I like to read. You know, I have a lot of people that I've loved over the years, both in TV and in books, whether it be Philip Marlowe or Lou Archer or Spencer or Harry Bosch, all the way to Jim Rockford and, you know, Columbo and all these people. So when I'm writing a character, I know what I like, and I'm trying to write a character that I would want to read. Because I think if you do it the other way and you try to write a character that you think somebody else is going to want to read, it's something that never has worked for me. And my feeling is I have pretty good taste, you know, and I think like if I write a character and I like this character, there will be enough people out there, hopefully, that will also like that character. And as everybody here has pointed out, rightfully so, you're going to get people who don't like the character. I don't like her. She's too smart-ass. She's too, you know, she's too this. She's too that. But if you like her, to me, that is step one in creating a good character, if you like that character yourself.
You have to enjoy what you're,
you
know, at the end of the day, what I tell people is, you know, and this is like, you know, directing this to people probably listening, you have to really like what, you know, if you started writing because you think it's fun and you enjoy it, then you should keep doing that and not be so worried about what everybody's thinking, because that really is a writer's block. When you start worrying about what everybody's thinking, because that gets in your head, and for some reason you can't right then. So the best thing is to do enjoy what you do and try to get the best story you can, which is why, like, I know you introduced it as a good story is a good story, because my manager years ago used to say, just write a good story. And that's what I did with my screenplays. Doesn't mean it's people are going to love them or buy them or even your books, whatever, but you still have to be happy with what you end up with. Because it is your work out there. And, you know, I struggle myself with finding a genre that I like. And because when I did screenplays, I did every genre. So I'm now what I'm doing is I'm doing books from my screenplays. And I still haven't found what I like. And Fran knows this about me. Mm-hmm. I love my character, Virginia Templeton, and I love mm-hmm. my romantic comedy because I have a dog in it called Gracie, and she's a character to me. So I struggle with that, and I think a lot of writers do. And it's hard to like your writing and think that even when I get good reviews, but that for me, just I am confused sometimes as to what I want to write. And I think there are a lot of people like that. And a lot of people here, you write series, and which is really good. And it's not – you know, people think, oh, it's easy. It's not easy because you got to keep going with a story about those characters and keep them fresh. And like as you said, Fran can tell if somebody is maybe done with this character, because if you don't want to read it, Fran, then it's not interesting mm-hmm. to you. And if you love that author, that's a shame. You know,
I agree
think
with
the
you.
Only way
I
you
agree
keep,
with you. I agree with
I
you.
I think
you
the
know
only
what?
Way we can keep it fresh is if we keep truly creative and keep thinking of
yeah.
more plots or themes for yeah. the for the person you love, you know, your main character, and you're true to her. I mean,
yeah.
she'll change.
I agree
or
with
he
you, Marilyn,
and,
on that one. You're right. You're right. As a matter of fact, you know, if you stop reading reviews and just read mine, you'd probably feel a whole lot better. Because a lot of people just seriously, a lot of people write reviews just to hear themselves speak. I mean, especially the
absolutely.
Ones that say the book was great.
Especially on Goodreads.
Wonderful. I on Goodreads, I put people only that I like on Goodreads, and I put very little on there. I don't hold stock to what they say all the time.
Oh,
I mean,
oh,
after a while, yeah. Seriously speaking, the book was great. I'm going to read it. Did you read it? Can you read? Do you comprehend? Oh,
oh
my
God. God.
But my
yeah,
question
I know.
To you is seriously, how do you take the title of the book? This is the hardest thing for well, that's why all my characters are dead. Seriously, I didn't have to come up with one person.
Maybe you've
they're
got an
dead.
Answer there. Maybe you've got the right answer.
Yeah, they're all dead. They're all behind the funerals. They're all behind the gravestone. I'm writing another one, actually. And John's going to help me decide if it's good or bad, or somebody's going to help me decide. I have one more story. I'm going to kill off somebody that aggravated me last week. You won't say who. Seriously, they're based on real-life events. If anybody gets me upset, they're going to wind up dead. Too bad. So don't read reviews. Just read mine. But, I mean, seriously speaking, how do you take the title that you write and connect it with the character? Because that's the other thing that I have no clue how to do. You know, how do you pick the name of the book? Like Carla, Inspect Imposter's Law, that got me. And Carla put something on Facebook and puts her book out there. Just send it. Don't even ask me, people. Just send it. What can I say? So how do you take the title and connect it to the book and then the cover art? That should...
Oh, titles for me, this is Carla, titles for me can really... can be a hit or miss in
mm-hmm.
hopefully by the time I arrive at one, it's the right one, but sometimes it's
yeah.
just right there.
Mm-hmm.
Saintscape, the first book in the Sharp and Donovan series, was just a title that was just there. And sometimes I'll do one that I'm not sure the publisher is going to go for, but they do. That was Declan's Cross. And sometimes with Imposter's Lure, I had a title, and I don't remember what it was, and I thought it was perfect, and they didn't. And they were right, because we came up with Imposter's Lure. I came up with Imposter's Lure, and it was great. But sometimes when I'm doing titles, I have a new one. I'm finishing up the next Sharp and Donovan, and it's called Rivals Break. And, I just love it. When I hit it, it's just like I felt it. It was just
yeah.
like everybody else has this experience.
yeah.
You just know, that's
yeah.
it. That's the
mm-hmm.
title.
Yeah.
But I think I use every single word in the dictionary before I got to it. You know, I just
yeah.
write down
yeah.
words, words, mm-hmm. words, and then it's
yeah.
like, ah, there it is.
Yeah, I think, you know, it titles for me, you know, and I when I did Virginia Templeton stories, I have three separate stories, and that for me, that, you know, I made a lot of mistakes with that, but the character stands out. So I'm actually going to write another one, but the mistakes that I made is I'm not really a short story writer, and I do like novellas, so I made it into a novella with three different stories, which I don't think works well. So I won't do that again. You know, but you learn from your mistakes. And, I think one of the reasons people listen to my show after all these years, because I tell them all the mistakes I've made, because I have made a lot of them. But the mistakes turn into learning experiences for me. And so I think that a lot of times people think you sit down and you just write a story. But listening to everybody here, no. Like you said, the title is... Carla, when you said the title, it's hard. You just don't sometimes say, oh, this is it, and sometimes you do. So we can't – a lot of these questions that we're all answering, we all know that it's a struggle one way or other. And then finally, like what you said, you get that aha moment, and then you like it.
I have to say that the last two titles I did not choose. I have a group of authors, of friends. We all write similar books. And I had title suggestions, you know, related to libraries. And my friends came out with even better titles. And the last two, the committee picked. Fine, I go with it. The same thing with the covers. I give my suggestions, and somehow they're right. So I seem to leave covers and titles to the publisher at this point.
Yeah.
I mean, I have my suggestions, but, I mean, I'm overruled and it's fine.
I think that's actually a really good, and this is John, a really good attitude, I think, because a title is, I wouldn't turn it over entirely to somebody else. Obviously it's a team effort. But a title
is a
marketing. Yes, I know. A title is a marketing tool. A title is like a cover. It's like the size of your name. Whatever helps sell the book is whatever helps best sell the book is the title the book should have. Branding, because we live in a business. We live in a world that's all about branding. And if you can establish a brand with your title, this is not new, by the way, with John D. McDonald, every Travis McGee book was a
color.
With the Alphabet series, with Sue Grafton, with the Number series, with Janet Ivanovich. If you have a recognizable brand that creates so this kind of – this is going to sound like a contradiction to what I said earlier about changing it up and trying to grow Jessica Fletcher. Yes, that's true as far as content, but – as far as the look of the books, as far as the branding of the books, it's very dangerous to try to go outside what is familiar to people. So when they see when John Grisham was once asked, what is the most important thing you can to be a best-selling author? His first answer was, write a book every year that comes out at the same time. So people learn. Now, he didn't mention cover. He didn't mention title.
Right, right.
But if you look, and I'll give you a specific example of this because we're getting a little bit into the weeds here. The person who figured this all out, the first people to really master this, were Warner Books when they were still Warner before they became Grand Central. An editor named Mel Parker and a publisher named Larry Kirschbaum, when they signed David Morrell, they created what they called the mass market hardcover, where hardcover packages would look as splashy and colorful as paperback packages. With David Morrell, they wanted to create a brand. So if you look at his covers, Fraternity to the Stone, Brotherhood of the Rose, The Fifth Profession, The League of Night and Fog, if you look at his covers, they all look exactly the same with a different graphic. His name is in the same place. But those books were hugely successful in large part because although they weren't all part of an individual series, they all had a very distinctive look. The same thing is true if you look at Stephen King. They just rebranded a lot of his paperbacks. If you look at Clive Cussler, all the different series look the same. So I think when we talk about title, when we talk about cover, and even to an extent we talk about the name of the character, we're talking about branding.
Yeah. I just want to follow up quickly on what John was saying on the branding, because to me there's a couple different kinds of titles. I mean, my previous book before the Yesterday's News was called Blonde Ice, and that was a title that I had when I started to write it. It's about a female serial killer who's blonde and sexy and all this stuff. So I had that title in my mind, and that title works off the book. It doesn't work off the character or anything else. It just works off that particular plot. And, you know, and I thought it worked fine, and the publisher did too. When I wrote Yesterday's News, that's a story about a reporter looking into the disappearance of a little child many, many years ago who's been forgotten about. I came up with the title Forget Me Not, and the publisher called me when they were going to publish it, and they're like, it's a great title. It perfectly captures the book. Everything about it is great, except we don't want to use it. And the reason was the branding issue, because, no, for a good reason, because, number one, it sounded a little bit like a romance rather than a mystery, but they also wanted to play up the idea that I was writing about the media and a media character. So they said, let's call it Yesterday's News. And I think that's an example. I'm sure I'm not the only person that's gone through that. And you don't say yes to a title you don't like, but when they work with you on something and you go, yeah, I can see that. Yeah. I understand. I see where you're going with that. So each title can be different. You can have the title at the beginning of the book, which I've done, and you can come up with the title after the book is done, or you can come up with what you think is a hell of a title, and it winds up getting changed for a lot of reasons.
Yeah. It is about branding. Everything lately is about branding. You know,
it's a good point. Publishers coming up with titles. I mean, it's really, it is sort of up to the publisher. My most successful book ended up getting a title that the publisher solely picked called Spy Dance. I don't know what the hell Spy Dance means, but people liked the title and they liked the book. Hey, I was happy.
I didn't read that one. How come I didn't read that one?
I'm
going to tell you something, Dick. The reason why I took your book is because of the title.
Good.
I saw Yesterday's News, and then your publicist sent it to me, and it was staring at me. And it literally said, will you pick it up and read it? And I'm just like, oh, my. I mean, it's scary. Ocean View Publishing is amazing, and I've got so many books inside, and your new book is in my to-read pile, even though it's coming out next year. I don't care.
Right.
And I actually started D.P. Lyle's book also, which is hilarious.
Right.
So, I mean, you never know. But I picked it up because it said Yesterday's News, and I go like, wait a minute. This has to be something different. But you use your real-life experience. And Alan Topol, you have another series, The Washington Lawyer, which uses your real-life experience. So who else uses their real-life experience? I know Marcia does. Everybody does. But this is what excites me to read everybody's work. Just keep sending them.
I think it's mixtures.
Sorry.
I think people probably would. It's a mixture because you can't erase what's in our head, you know. And sometimes, like when you've written something and then you go back and you try to write, let's say, something about it, and all of a sudden the voice comes right back to you. Everything comes the same. You know, you pick it up. They are, but you always don't know everything. I think I don't know.
But your experiences really inform it, because if you've been down in the nitty gritty, which I have been in Washington Lawyer, then you can create that character.
Yes.
You're not simply going by research or grasping. You've lived with that stuff, and I think that helps a lot. It gives you a big leg up early on.
You can learn things too as an author. I've written about search and rescue and talked to the people who are out there and done a lot of hands-on research to help inform the characters, and you use your imagination. And then it's so I love to do that. But at the same time, there's things that I've done absolutely myself, like the Sharp and Donovan series has an element that's in Ireland, and I spend a lot of time in Ireland. And so when they're those descriptive scenes are there, it might just be a telling detail, but that comes out of the that personal experience. And obviously, I'm in New England, so the New England stuff is there. But I think a lot of this is it's what you're interested in, what your where your imagination takes you, and you can do really well with that. I think it's a lot of fun.
Yeah, I end up in. I worked for doctors for many years, and I worked in hospitals as a lab tech. And I, I never realized that a lot of times my editor would say, do you know that a lot of your scenes end up in either their doctors or in a hospital? And I didn't really equate all of my writing to that, but I guess it is that way because I do have doctors as characters. And so I guess in my brain, that's what I see, you know, when I'm or what I'm thinking. So
well,
I don't even want to be in my brain. I don't want to be in my own brain.
No, but you know those doctors and you know those hospitals. Mm-hmm. So when you write about it, you can give it such a strong element of truth and validity.
Yes,
so,
of reality. Well, that's why I do
reality.
Romantic. That's why I do comedy, because I did work for doctors. I know what they do. You know, and it does, you know, and it's like everything else. You know, when you know a doctor, you know, and sometimes they do have flaws, you know, and so, but they
mm-hmm.
have also personal lives. They could be a psychiatrist and be a wonderful psychiatrist, but their own personal lives are not always fabulous, you know. So it's just whatever a person comes up with, like you just said, with using your imagination. That's what we do, hopefully.
Well, before I forget, I got to announce my shows for this week and next week. And, yeah, I'll say something about the doctor thing in about a half a second, but I'm going to be real careful about what I say because I know who's listening and shouldn't be. Cindy McDonald takes center stage with her Fiona Quinn. She's a little bit touch of a Jessica Fletcher and Hedy Winthrop and a whole bunch of more. Agatha Christie, and she's really got a cute series. On the 17th, Vincent Zandri takes center stage with his Chase Baker. And what a way to end it. I felt so bad. Matt Coyle, I am so sorry that we didn't happen on the 4th because Blog Talk had a systems breakdown. So we're going to talk about Wrong Light on the 18th and Stephen James on the 20th, Every Wicked Man. I mean, I am so excited about those. And on January 17th, FBI agent Michael Tabman and I are going to be talking about the rising cost of healthcare, medical malpractice, seriously. I think that's an interesting topic.
Oh, yeah.
Possibly immigration. And I had to help my niece write a term paper, and I learned a lot about federal regulations of e-cigarettes. And I think that's one of the other crazy topics that we're going to talk about. And probably because my characters are all dead, I get to kill off any teachers that bothered me in the past from personal experience of being an educator. So I have one question that we can all take for the last 10 minutes. This is a tough one, people. Okay. John Caitlin Strong, and we have Craig Page and Virginia Templeton and Emma Sharp, and we have Carrie Singleton, and we have Elizabeth. We have all the female characters. I hope I didn't leave anybody out.
Claire Carlson.
How would your character describe themselves to readers? If your character had to do an ad for your book, this is a question I had to help my niece write the other day. How would your character create an ad for your book to make people want to come back and read the next one? And what is the next one, and when am I getting it? Seriously, this is important.
You see how nobody's answering you?
Do you mean physical characteristics or personality or?
I don't care. No, a personality. How would your character describe themselves to readers to say, I want more Carrie Singleton, I want more Emma Sharp, I want more Caitlin Strong. Caitlin Strong is like me, so definitely John's going to write more. And John, I sent you some titles, but you don't have to use them. That was just my brilliance for the day. So how would your character
describe
themselves?
I think with Caitlin Strong, you know, it's interesting because characters – they don't exist to sell books. They exist to be characters to drive the action in books. And I think Caitlin, you asked this, but see, the reality of having a recurring character
mm-hmm.
who is very well known, who is becoming very well known for what she does, is that has
mm-hmm.
to me that has to be acknowledged. Someone who has done all the things that Caitlin has done in Texas would be a celebrity. She would be recognizable to a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
How she deals with her celebrity and the fact in for example, I think it's Strong as Steel, the next one that's coming out, it might be Strong to the Bone. I take the title
mm-hmm.
from the fact that that's the title some Hollywood people have chosen for a movie adaptation based upon her.
Yeah.
So it's like they're making this movie about her, or they want to make a movie about her, and they've given and they've called her something. And how she reacts to that, my guess is she would probably not be the best person to promote the books in which she's in, because she'd probably tell people that I'm stressing a lot of the facts about her character that she doesn't like, that she doesn't want to be identified as a gunfighter. Mm. So maybe the way she'd promote it is kind of like saying, you know, folks, I don't think you should buy this book because there's too much gun, there's too much gunplay, there's too much violence, there's too much sex, there's too much blood, there's too many surprises. Mm-hmm. This is so I think she'd probably actually sell the book by trying not to sell the book. So it would be fun, but I think Caitlin would be a lousy salesperson for the books about her.
I think
she'd be the worst.
And I'll do a Virginia Templeton. Okay, she's very sexy, but she would want people mostly to know her as being very intelligent, smart, and which she is. And that will be the next step. That is what, if I write her again, that is what I'm going to do with her, because she is sexy, but she's really smart. So, and that's what I want.
We have to write it, Marcia, because my manicurist loves your work, and she refuses to give back the book.
Listen, my manager, who now is in a retirement home, and he told me, he said somebody stole his copy of Virginia Templeton, so he wants another
one. My uncle wants one, too. My uncle's 97 years old, and he wants a copy of your book, too. It keeps him and his girlfriend happy. That's what he told me.
Let me jump in. I'll do Claire Carlson. So the next book, as you know, Fran, because you have it, is called Below the Fold. And Below the Fold really is it's an old newspaper term when a story isn't, you know, worth the top of the front page. It's, you know, it's kind of like a smaller story or a smaller crime, and so that's the premise, and that's the media angle. But in terms of my character, Claire Carlson, I guess it was John that said my character would probably be like, she wouldn't be the best character to promote herself because she's very self-deprecating on some levels, but I think basically she would say something the effect of, she's very proud of herself as a journalist. You know, I am like, I'm as good a journalist as anybody. I'm terrific as a journalist. I'm not that great in other aspects of my life. You know, she's been through three marriages. Mm-hmm. She's got a lot of issues in her personal life. And she's also, if you've read the book, she's a bit of, you know, what has become known as the unreliable narrator. She tells the truth, but she doesn't tell you all the truth about what's going on in her life. So as a journalist, she's terrific, and I'm sure she would tell you that. And I think she would be very admit that she's got a lot of other problems going on.
Well, Carrie Singleton comes from a very dysfunctional family, and she's first beginning to find herself, so she's pretty proud that she does a good job in the library, and she solves mysteries, and she has her first real serious love relationship and friends. So that's really what she's proud of. And in the third book, she's doing more for the community. So she's been growing in a nice, healthy way. And, of course, there are all kinds of obstacles in her path, but she does a pretty good job.
Yes, she does, and I like your ghost also. I like your ghost.
Oh, yes, she has a friend who's a ghost. That's a whole other area. Introducing paranormal elements, which I love to do into my in some of my books. And
so
I don't know why, but I've had ghosts, I've had witches and such, but we don't have time for that.
I know, we got about 5 minutes.
Real quickly, in terms of Kelly Cameron, you said the Washington lawyer, she's the one I'm working on next. We're holding Craig Page, book, but she would say, hey, I want people to understand that China really poses a threat to the U.S., and that's the way I'm working on the book. And hey, the newspaper headlines are evolving, and we're kind of right there. But that's what she would want people to know if she were saying something.
Okay. I think we didn't hear Carla. Did we hear Carla?
Emma Sharp is a FBI art crimes expert. Very cool and analytical, but she has an interesting past as a former nun, and I mean, she never took her final vow. She was a novice, and an interesting family. The Sharp family are private art detectives, and they cause her problems. So, but she's very dedicated to them.
I love Wendell though, and I love Oliver.
Wendell's her grandfather, and how Emma Sharp came about really was because Wendell was a minor character in an unrelated book, a previous series called the book's called The Whisper, and I just knew I had to continue with him, and he's an octogenarian, world-renowned art detective.
He's my kind of person, though. I like him. So before we end, everybody tell everybody where they can find them and what's next and when am I getting in. And if you're coming out with somebody, please, with something, please let me know, because January is almost filled. And I would like to do another panel show in February. The other thing that I have trouble with, but none of you have trouble with it, I do, and that's probably why I write in, you know, first-person narrative from dead people's point of view, which is really easy. No, seriously. My next book, if I ever finish it, is going to come out, I hope, in February or one of the years, one of the months of the year. It's called Silenced Voices, and it's about people whose voices have been silenced due to the actions of other people. That's the best I could come up with. That's the truth. And I hope everybody reads it. It's based on, some of it is based on real life experience, and some of it is based on my wicked imagination. And that killed
now that's
just
a good
about
title.
Everybody. And I get, yeah, thank you. Because there were people in my life that were silenced because of other people, and there are people that should have been silenced before they opened their mouths. But I would like to do a show on dialogue, because I have no clue how to write dialogue. And when you guys write it, I actually read it, because you don't waste time with, oh, he drank a cup of coffee and put his cup down. That makes me go to sleep. So before, if anybody wants to do that one, let me know, because I'm going to do it in February somehow. Dialogue.
I mean, I can do that one. I can talk.
Oh, good. I have faith in everybody.
I'd be happy to do it too, Fran, if you're interested. Yeah, absolutely.
Of course I'm interested. I'm always interested, yes. And I won't forget to put your name in it this time or anybody else. I won't forget.
Did you say dialogue or dialect?
Dialect and dialogue, both. Both.
Oh, I can do dialogue. I don't have any dialect.
Dialogue.
In the Northwest. Oh, I could do dialogue.
Dialogue
in February.
Because I have no idea how to write quotes, and I'm a reading major and reading and writing specialist. So before we end, John, where can we find out about everything about you? Let's go around the room here and everybody tell with it what's coming out next, where we can find out, and when am I going to get the next Caitlin Strong book? This is very
important. I just got the galleys of Strong as Steel. They just arrived, so you'll be getting it very soon. It comes out in April. The early response to it has been fantastic. And I always tell people, if you want to know, just Google my name or Caitlin Strong, read what the people say about her, read what they say about what I've done with Jessica Fletcher, and make up your own mind whether these books are for you. But Caitlin will be back in April in Strong as Steel.
Oh, that's good. I will set up an interview with you whenever you're ready. Just let me know. I'm always there. Okay. Just tell everybody about yours.
Who?
Anybody.
Marcia Cook. Okay, you can find me at MarciaCasperCook.com. And you can find me, just put my name in, and, you know, that you'll find me. But that's the weirdest thing, because my name is really Marcia Cook. Casper's my maiden name, and I did it for a joke when I started writing, that, oh, I'll just do this. And now everybody calls me that, so that's how I go. But really, it's Marcia Cook, but Marcia Casper Cook is where you could find me. Anywhere.
Okay. I have a new book coming out in September.
Oh, good.
This is Marilyn Levinson, but my books are for this series are under Allison Brooke, and then and the new title that they came out with was Buried in the Stacks. It's a very unpleasant librarian is murdered. And that book will be out in September. And you could see, you can go to my Amazon page. Everything's under Marilyn Levinson, or my website, which is marilynlevinson.com.
I'm at R.J. Belsky. I'm at rgbelsky.com, and that's even though my name is Dick Belsky, and I think that you've mentioned that a couple of times, Fran. The book's all written under rgbelsky.com, and the current one is Yesterday's News. And, you know, as we talked about, Below the Fold, the next in the Claire Carlson series, will be out in May.
And
I'm,
the interview
I'm
is May 2nd. For those people that don't know, it's on May 2nd at 10 o'clock with R.G. Belsky. Just
there you go.
I'm Alan Topol. You can get me on alantopol.com, A-L-L-A-N. The next title's Washington Operator. Don't have a pub date, but it's going to be later this year, and you'll be the first to know, Fran, I promise.
Oh, good, because I have to put you in my schedule of 10 million. I just booked a show with Charles Salzberg for June. So we're getting up there, people. This is good. And, Carla, what's coming next that I'm going to get very soon, I hope?
Okay, I'm at carlaneggers.com and have an Amazon page and BookBub page and all that. And the next one is actually Stone Bridges, March 26th, and that's a women's fiction romance, lots of fun. And then Rivals Break will be out in late August.
Oh, that's
Fran,
good.
Can I say one thing? I just
want
to say it was nice meeting everybody. It was very nice meeting everybody. It's fun to meet.
Same here.
Great show, Fran. Thanks.
Yes, very
Thank
good,
Thank you so
Fran.
Much. Carla, am I getting this one? Do you want me to read the next one that you're getting?
I will get you a copy. Thank you.
This is good, and I will tag everybody for a show. Then, Alan, when did you say Washington Operator is coming out? You don't know yet, but I'll...
Sometime
I'll
later this
don't
year.
Worry.
Don't have an update yet. Right. I'll let you know,
don't
Fran,
worry.
Promise.
I'll fit everybody in. No problem. I mean, I my show's booked for the whole month of January. I don't know how I did it, but yeah, it should be interesting. And Brian Freeman is coming back with his series of Jonathan Stride on the 5th. I just finished his Lou Frost one, which is the strong. Oh, that's the one. Strongest, The Crooked Street. That comes out on February 5th, and that's when he's doing that one with me. He's a Frost Easton. It's fantastic. So I want to thank everybody very, very much.
Thank you.
You guys are the best. And if anybody wants to be on the dialogue show, I'm going to pick a date in February, preferably not Valentine's Day. Don't worry about that. That I can do. And if everybody wants to do dialogue with me, that would be fantastic. Everyone, it's a beautiful day outside. Everybody
have
a nice day.
Are you
going to
sing? Is that the next thing? The next thing.
But me, if I could sing, I wouldn't have, you know. I did major in music in college, and truth of the matter is that the professor that gave me the B+ or the A- for my song program gave me and told me not to take the next class. He gave me an extra B+ because that's how talented I am. And for my program, I sang Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Star, Mary Had a Little Lamb, Three Blind Mice, and Farajaka, and I'm very serious.
Talent.
So I can't sing. But I did pass because she said I was adorable and cute. That was it. Everybody, have a great day. And I will email everybody with the details for dialogue. If you want to join me, I will let you know when.
Yeah.
Thank you, everybody.
Okay.
Have a great day.
Thank you.
And bye.
Bye-bye.
Goodbye.
Bye.
Bye. Bye. Bye.